This week, we have a special Christmas episode. We'll be taking next week off to spend some time with our family. So our next episode after this will air on the 28th, and that'll be the last episode for 2020. So we hope you guys are having a happy holiday season so far. We're going to share a handful of Christmas stories first, liven things up a little bit. Then we're going to talk about a terrible Christmas murder.
Bringing things back down.
This episode does include some adult themes, so parental discretion is advised.
These are not my pants.
Hello, and welcome to episode 10 of These Are Not My Pants.
Double digits.
That's right. My name is Michelle, and I'm here as always with my jolly husband and co-host,
Matthew. Ho, ho, ho. Christmas is a strange time of year, so we've got some odd and funny Christmas stories for you, as well as some Christmas murder.
Mwah-ah-ah.
But first, the fun. Story number one, buy your own gift. Last Christmas, Grandpa was feeling his age and found shopping for Christmas gifts had become too difficult, so he decided to send everybody checks instead. In each card, he wrote, "Buy your own present," and mailed them early so that his family members could go shop before the holidays. He enjoyed the usual flurry of family and festivities. It was only after the holidays that he noticed he had only received a few cards in return. Puzzled over this, he went into a study intending to write a few of his relatives to ask what had happened. It was then, when he cleared off the clutter on his desk, that he got the answer. Under a stack of papers, he was horrified to find the gift checks which he had forgotten to enclose with the cards.
Buy your own gift. Love, Grandpa. And story number two, titled, Didn't Bring Home the Beer. Charleston County Sheriff Office deputies were called to the home of Helen Williams Christmas Day 2013. On arrival, they found a man covered in blood. Williams alleged that he had just fallen and cut himself. After further questioning, it was determined that Williams actually stabbed her male companion in the left shoulder and chest area with a ceramic squirrel because he neglected to bring home beer. Helen Ann Williams, then 44 years old, was arrested and charged with criminal domestic violence of a high and aggressive nature. The victim told deputies that he had attempted to buy beer, but all the stores were closed on Christmas Day. Shop ahead.
No planning. Christmas story number three is called This Place Needs Fixing Up.
Are you talking about our house?
No. This is, however, a local story. This comes from Colorado Springs back in 2014. Carrie Carley, then 42, and husband, then 18-year-old,
what?
Jeremy Lawallen, were taken into custody on Christmas Eve. They were arrested for stealing over $2,000 worth of Christmas decorations from their neighbor's yards. They were arrested after police found the stolen decorations decorating their own yard. Carly alleged she had no knowledge of the crime. She said every morning he'd go out for a walk or iron like 2 or 3 in the morning and then there'd just be more stuff in the yard. When asked why she didn't report the crime, she said, "I didn't know if I called if I was going to get in trouble myself or if not because, you know, it was my yard." Carly was able to bond out while her 18-year-old barely adult husband, Llewellyn, spent Christmas Day in jail as he had a little bit of a history for this type of stuff. Matter of fact, he had just been arrested the previous month for stealing Halloween decorations.
Honey, go to Dollar Tree. Just they have some old cheap things. Get your own stuff. And now we have story number four, titled A Warning Sign. If you've ever seen the classic 1989 National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, there may be several scenes that are near and dear to your heart. Same could be said for Chris Heerling of Austin, Texas, as he decided to pay homage to one of his favorite Christmas movies and recreate one of those scenes as a holiday decoration. Chris hung a dummy from the gutter of his house as if it were hanging on for his life. The latter, having fallen, lay in the grass below, but his recreation might have been a little too lifelike. The day after he hung the display, Good Samaritan Alfred Norwood Jr. stopped his car and rushed to help the man hanging on for his life. Footage of the heroic act was captured on a nearby doorbell camera, showing Norwood running up to the house, yelling, "Can you reach it? Can you reach it? Help!" Al yells as he returns to his car, calling 911 for help. When Harlan found out what happened, he contacted Norwood, thanking him for his concern, but advised him that the dummy was in good condition. Soon after, the police arrived at his front door, advising that they had received multiple calls. The homeowner responded by putting up a couple of signs. Clark G. is part of our Christmas display. Please don't call 911. Norwood, former USAF serviceman, received a reward of a $500 gift card from Harlan for his heroism. Of all the passers-by, he was the only one who got out of his car and attempted to help.
A real hero.
A real hero.
And our last fun Christmas story. This one's called Down on His Luck, But He's Got a Knack. Terry Trent, 44 years old, made a series of bad decisions Christmas 2011. This Dayton, Ohio man's first bad decision was taking bath salts.
Woof.
This probably aided in the next bad decision, which was to break into a house in Vandalia, Ohio, entering through the back door. His further bad decisions were to decorate for the holidays, as it apparently wasn't up to his satisfaction. He also lit some candles in the dining room, sat down on the couch, watched some TV at very high volume. He was observed playing on the couch with the toys that belonged to the 11-year-old resident, who ran back home to his neighbor's house to inform his mother of the intruder, who promptly called 911.
So he was home alone?
No, the boy was next door with the mom and had just, like, come home to, like, get something and, like, there's a dude on my couch.
And playing with my toys.
Like, playing with my toys. Turned right back around and went, like, what are you doing with my Legos?
Wow.
But definitely went to jail, and don't do bath salts.
Bath salts are bad. And now for our main and murderous Christmas story.
This is a truly tragic story, really one of the most horrific murders I've ever researched, and I've been doing this for more than a decade.
The holiday massacre of the Lawson family, and a little bit of a trigger warning, this episode does involve incredibly young children.
About a week before Christmas, 1929, Charlie Lawson, a respected tobacco farmer in Germantown, North Carolina, took his family into town to purchase new clothes and to have a family portrait taken. This was a rare treat for the rural family, who rarely went to town at all, not to mention that photographs were prohibitively expensive at the time. An article from unmaskedhistory.com compared the cost of the photo to be akin to a spontaneous trip to Disney World. So in my mind, I'm thinking $1,000, and of course that's just speculation. A family photograph in 1929 was a big and seemingly needless expense for this large farming family. Something made memorializing his family at this moment important to Charlie Lawson, who likely had to drain his family savings for such a purchase.
Right. The picture has oldest son Arthur, age 16, and eldest daughter Maria, 17, standing next to their father, Charles Lawson, and his wife, their mother, Fanny, age 37. Fanny is holding the newest addition to their blooming family, 4-month-old Mary Lou. In the front row is 4-year-old James, 7-year-old Maybell, and 2-year-old Raymond, and then 12-year-old Carrie. Christmas morning began with their oldest daughter, Marie Rose, waking early to cook her traditional Christmas raisin cake. It had been a particularly cold and snowy December that year in North Carolina. Charlie, his oldest son Arthur, and his cousin Fast Sanders, who had slept over Christmas Eve, also woke early and went out hunting. They ran out of shells, and Charlie asked his oldest son to run an errand. His cousin, Fast Sanders, accompanied him into town.
And I just love the old-timey names. I love Fast Sanders. Right? I think that's great.
I want to name my cat that. I don't even have a cat.
Fast Sanders, see?
Right?
And I know what you're probably thinking, because I was thinking the same thing. He's going out to buy ammunition on Christmas Day? And yeah, it was 1929. It was a common practice to live at or above your shop, so you could be available anytime, day or night, even on the holidays. So anybody could just knock on the door and you just come down and make a sale. And honestly, if you think about it, it was probably the only way to stay afloat back when there was such a small population, really. Sure. So soon after Arthur and Fast leave, Charlie's daughter Carrie and Maybell, 7, made the decision to go to their uncle's house.
Their father waited for them, pacing around a tree next to the tobacco barn. When they were in range, he shot them both. One was apparently shot with a rifle, and the other with a shotgun. It's unknown why he switched weapons. Some speculate that the rifle may have jammed. It's also unknown whether or not the shotgun blasts simply didn't kill them, or if he just wanted to ensure that they were dead. He proceeded to bludgeon both of his daughters with the butt of his shotgun to ensure they were dead.
He pulled their bodies into the tobacco barn and posed the bodies, propping their heads up on rocks like pillows. He closed their eyes and crossed their arms in front of their chests. Charlie Lawson then walked out of the tobacco barn, closed the door, and headed for the house. Approaching the dilapidated wooden structure, he shot his wife Fanny, who was out on the front porch retrieving some firewood. Inside, oldest daughter Marie heard the shot and started screaming. The two young boys ran and found places to hide inside the home.
It was initially thought that Fanny died instantly on the porch, but Trudy J. Smith, author of White Christmas, Bloody Christmas, and The Meaning of Our Tears, both books on the Lawson murders, found some interesting facts. She asserts that Fanny was on the front porch writhing in agony after being shot by her husband. The next part was witnessed by a 9-year-old neighbor who had witnessed and survived the attack. He allegedly heard the screaming and came in from the back of the house just in time to see Charlie Lawson gun down his 17-year-old daughter Marie. The shotgun blast also stopping the clock on the wall behind her, marking the moment of her death at 1:25 in the afternoon. The 9-year-old allegedly looked the killer in the eye and received a threat from Charlie Lawson before the young man fled the scene. And I kind of wonder what that threat was. Like,
it was something to the effect of, if you don't leave, you will be next.
Yikes. And at 9, I'm out of there.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that 9-year-old took that threat seriously, because I don't know if it was out of trauma or fear, but his story didn't come out for 70 years. He was in his 80s before he recanted his story to a healthcare worker or caregiver, and even then he struggled doing so. And if you want more details on that, you'll have to read the books previously mentioned. They go into much more detail. Charlie Lawson found the hiding places of his two young sons, Raymond and James, and he then proceeded to bludgeon both of his sons to death. He killed the defenseless 4-month-old baby Mary Lou, who lay in her crib last. All of them died from blunt force trauma.
So none of the three younger children were shot?
No.
Wow. The bodies of the Lawson family were found by Charlie's brother, Claude Lawson, along with Claude's son. They had been out hunting when they decided to stop and wish his brother and his family a Merry Christmas. But instead, as they stepped inside, they found the bodies of the murdered family. They would leave to summon the authorities, but as they were leaving, Claude turned and swore he saw a face in the upstairs window. It could have been Charlie, who had to go upstairs to retrieve their belongings, as all of them posed with their own pillows under their heads and dressed in their new clothes, like his daughters left in the tobacco barn. He posed each of his family members with their eyes closed and arms crossed across their chest.
Many Germantown neighbors came to view the crime scene. Apparently, back then it was not uncommon for the townsfolk to just walk right into the crime scene and walk around the bodies. And yeah, that was normal.
Sure. There's no TV, right?
No TV. There's no forensic files to watch. So let's go check it out. Many of them were still there when they heard a shot come from the woods around dusk. That was when they found the body of Charles Lawson. He had been in the woods for several hours, apparently pacing around quite extensively through the trees for hours after the killing. Charlie had his two hunting dogs with him, Sam and Queen, and there were a lot of tracks just wandering throughout the trees. It apparently took him 2 to 3 hours before he finally worked up the nerve to kill himself.
Thousands attended the funeral. The baby Mary Lou was placed in the arms of her mother. At the end of the eulogies, the caskets were opened so that they could be viewed by the public. Afterwards, the family was buried together in the small Browder family cemetery, the Browders being previous landlords of the Lawsons, donated the plot.
In the wake of the shocking murders, many people came to visit the family house, and Marion, Charlie's brother, had to make a decision. Arthur was devastated and unable to run the family farm on his own, and there were people out there, kind of like us, who were fascinated with the macabre and began literally taking anything they could as souvenirs from the house. So he went with the tide and turned the home into a tourist attraction, charging 25 cents for visitors. Mary's raisin Christmas cake would remain on display for 5 years, eventually under a glass case for visitors to see as they walked through the infamous Lawson Christmas murder house.
I feel like they didn't have many options. If they do nothing, they lose the farm. People are coming and taking anything they can get their hands on anyway. Why not make a buck or 25 cents as they do so? There were several reports of people taking raisins from the cake, probably why they had to put it under glass. People taking samples of wood that had blood on it, rocks from outside, literally anything.
And I have to think about Arthur, who would have returned at one point on Christmas Day from running his errands to find this horrific scene. And nothing's really said about what happened when he returned home. I really couldn't find any details about that part. Arthur did die in his early 30s when he was allegedly pinned underneath a truck which crushed his chest following an accident. Details of the event are spotty at best, but it sounds like he was a passenger in a vehicle after an accident. The bodies of the Lawson family were all buried in the clothing from the picture, and I personally believe that it was the intent of the purchase of the new clothes and the picture itself to memorialize that incident, as he knew his family was going to be gone soon and there would be no evidence of them. Speculation and conjecture filled the townsfolk, who tried to come up with some motive for this seemingly devoted father and husband to just snap and kill almost his entire family.
One theory was that Charlie had witnessed something, organized crime maybe, and he and his family were murdered to keep them silent. But if that were the case, how could the oldest son of the family be left alive? If that were true, wouldn't you assume that he would also be a target? And I mean, don't forget, he killed himself in the woods.
Right. I don't give much stock to that theory at all.
The second theory was that Charles was suffering from the after effects of a head injury. Apparently, he had a brain injury, and it hadn't been the same since. He was alleged to have terrible headaches and bouts of rage since the accident. I would like to add here that that's all conjecture. There's no hard evidence to prove any of these theories, and this case is almost a century old, so I'll doubt we'll ever know.
The final theory is the darkest one, and that is that Charles Lawson had an inappropriate relationship with his 17-year-old daughter, Marie. Some stories state that a family friend, Ella May, friend of 17-year-old Marie, had slept over, and Marie had broke down crying, stating that she was pregnant and her father, Charlie Lawson, was the father of her baby.
Yikes.
If this is true, this would certainly be potential motive for the murders. But again, this is all just conjecture. I've not found any hard evidence proving any of these theories.
In the 1930s, a rustic folk band called the Carolina Buddies released a song called The Murder of the Lawson Family. We listened to it, and rustic is a good word for it.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement.
In fact, when he put it on, I didn't even know what it was. Then I was like, is this a song about the murder? Should we add this to our Christmas playlist? Because I'm just not sure.
The family home would fall to the ground sometime in the 70s, and all the wood was hauled away. The plot of land is no longer recognizable as the location of this notorious crime.
We'll probably never know what was going on in Charlie Lawson's head when he decided to kill his family, but I do feel that it was premeditated, and I think he knew what was going to happen weeks before when he planned the outing to buy the new clothes and the expensive family photograph.
I've looked closely at these photographs and I found it haunting. The look on Charlie Lawson's eyes is one of fear, like he knows what's about to come.
I kind of got that same vibe, but I get that same vibe from every killer's photograph that I look at, like there's something wrong with this guy. And I wonder if someone gave me photos of a non-killer and a killer, if I would be able to tell the difference.
Like, that's the guy.
That's the guy.
So that was our Christmas episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely. And we definitely hope that everybody has a very Merry and Happy Christmas or Hanukkah or Yule, whatever it is that you celebrate. There's a couple.
Festivus.
Kwanzaa. What else is out there? I don't know. I don't want to skip anybody. We love all of you. but we do just hope that you have a beautiful holiday. And we look forward to wrapping things up with you guys on the 28th and then hitting it hard into 2021. We got a lot of great cases planned and really looking forward to it. Thanks for being with us, guys.
Bye.
Don't forget to burn your murder shoes. Bye, Charlie.
It's finally here. We now have These Are Not My Pants merch. Woo. Support your favorite newbie podcasters and get yours today.
We have hoodies, both pullover and zip up. We also have tank tops, shirts, and my favorite, tie-dye. And we also have plus sizes.
Fatties.
That's us, by the way. Visit storefrontier.com/these-are-not-my-pants. That is storefrontier.com/these-are-not-my-pants.
The store is also linked on our Facebook and Instagram.
So get yours today. Bye. Burn your murder shoes. That hoodie is available. Bye. Now, you might be wondering how you can get a hold of us.
We are on facebook.com/groups/these-are-not-my-pants.
We're also on Instagram.
Podcast Not My Pants.
You can email us at
podcastnotmypants@gmail.com.
And we're learning Twitter at
Podcast My Pants.
So that's how you can reach us. Please do so. We want to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening.